You're due for your biannual cleaning, something you usually forget and would rather not remember. But you just got a reminder from the dentist you look forward to seeing. The Gentle Dentist, the only dentist you're happy to come back to. The Gentle Dentist in Worthington. How can we make you smile? Call 614-431-3311.
Do you eat, sleep, and breathe golf? Do you love to explore? And most importantly, do you just want to have some fun? Well, then welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren. Now here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence, and the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
Welcome to Talking Golf Getaways once again. Right off the bat, you may hear us laughing because we have a great show for you today with our friend Pete Flanagan. Thanks for finding us wherever you consume podcasts, iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher, and as always, on the Golf News Net platform at golfnewsnet.com. I'm Mitch Lawrence in Myrtle Beach. He is indeed Darren Bunch in Bakersfield, home to Rio Bravo Country Club. Rio Bravo Country Club. I just had to say it again, Darren. You can find us on social media, Darren at Getaways Golf on Twitter or at Golf Getaways on Instagram. You can find me at Mitch Lawrence, L-A-U-R-A-N-C-E, literally everywhere. And I mean it. All right. I mentioned Pete Flanagan. We have done a wonderful episode with Pete on Rams Hill. He and Darren went off for about, what was it, guys, 6 hours? Felt like
as long as this emergency nine is going to be.
Oh, I can't even. I've stocked up for food and I've got, well, I wish I had Sœur de Loge with me, but I don't. But I have other alcoholic beverages to get me through it.
I have half a bottle left and I'm pretty sure it's going to all be gone by the time Pete stops talking with his emergency nine or his emergency 13. We're going to have like a band and preserve worth of emergency nine questions with ones that we're going to spring on him as a guinea pig.
Well, luckily for all of us, Pete is just the guy to handle this kind of emergency 13 pressure. A great guy. We had the opportunity, Darren and I, to play some golf with him over the years. Last time was at Goat Hill Park in San Diego earlier this year. Fantastic day. Gifts from Pete, which included the aforementioned Sœur de Loge. A lot of laughs and a fun time. Darren hitting Sand Valley in Lawsonia with him as well. Jealous of that trip that they took. He's an entertainment lawyer by day. I certainly will not hold that against him. But more importantly to Darren and I in the world of golf, he is a crazy golf quester. That is Darren's actual name for Pete. He is a quester. I've never heard it, and I think, Pete, you should be proud to have that moniker. He may be known to you. He's got a great blog at regripped.com. That's regripped.com. And you should go there because he really has great musings on the game, but possibly even better known as a guy who is trying to play all the core Crenshaw courses. And I'm sure we're going to talk about a few of those in this emergency 13. But here's a pitch. Darren and I do this for Pete, and Pete only, although if you add me into this, I'd be eternally grateful. Pete is also seeking to play the coveted invite to Cypress Point, a non-core Crenshaw Holy Grail course that is Cypress Point. And Pete, I haven't drawn up the contract yet, but if you get me as part of that invite, then we'll come up with something great. You can find Pete on Twitter and Instagram at Regripped, all one word. And all right, Darren, Pete, here we go. We're going to try out a few new emergency nine questions on you, Pete. I don't know, Darren. Are you sure about this?
I have a question for him first. Pete, how many people do you estimate you have talked to about playing Cypress Point?
That's a good question. I'd probably say it's somewhere between 50 and 100. And that includes... That includes people online with the various social media platforms. It includes friends who know people who know members. So there's like several links in the chain. There's the random people I accost in airports that I see wearing Cypress Point gear or burger stands wearing Cypress Point gear. So yeah, the number is a little large.
What's great is that you haven't been arrested yet in this quest.
It is true.
It also includes an email to the great Sandy Tatum, who was the gentleman who got me on the Cypress Point, and obviously now deceased, a great gentleman who helped me. Unfortunately, we got you in touch with him just a little bit too late, but I just got to think, I got to keep holding out hope that eventually somebody's going to say yes, aren't they?
I think so. And it's fascinating to me that in the world of social media and the technology, technological revolution, that it's actually been a little bit easier, but also similarly on the other side of the sword, more frustrating to try to get an invite to a place like Cypress Point or Augusta National or what have you, is that there are more people that are easily interconnected now through things like Twitter and Facebook. But at the same time, those platforms also allow you to see all these other people you never would have met in your life playing the course that you want to play. It both puts it more accessible, but also a little bit further out of reach at the same time. But I'm making my best. I'm going through the world and just trying to talk to everyone I can. I'm trying not to build up the course too much in my mind, although I feel it's impossible at this point. I don't even know. It's sort of like the old saying about the dog who chases the mail truck. What would he ever do if he actually ever caught the mail truck?
Right.
And I don't know what I would do if I ever actually got the invite to Cypress Point, but I'd sure as heck enjoy it as much as anyone, for sure.
I dare you to say, no thanks, I was just kidding.
I think you make a great point, though, because not a day goes by, it feels like. You know, for me, Pine Valley would be the next thing on my list that I would really love to play if I was going to go play a private course. And it seems like every day somebody I follow on Twitter or Instagram is playing Pine Valley. It's like, well, they must have guests there every day from the way my social media feeds look. So why should it be that hard for me to get on there? So I'm sure you probably feel the same way about Cypress Point.
I feel the same way, especially around the Pebble Beach Pro-Am time. I was up there this year. Of course, there were several members playing, but also, too, if you watch the telecast, half the field has Cypress Point gear because they've played it that week.
I don't even know if I were you, if I'd be able to be there.
Well, one of the most amazing experiences of that whole weekend, when I was at the Pro-Am for 2 days and in the Monterey area for three, and one of the most amazing experiences was one of the bus drivers that shuttles you between the various properties, he took a wrong turn on 17 Mile Drive and actually drove us past Cypress Point, including the clubhouse.
There are no accidents.
There are no accidents. That was amazing.
He was just trolling you, basically. He was just like on his tour mic, he was like, and Pete Flanagan, here's a place you'll never play.
Darren and I paid him to take you there, just so you know.
Oh, that's brutal. All right, let's jump into the emergency nine. Yep.
All right, Pete, you ready?
I'm ready. Let's
You're
go,
always
boys.
Ready to talk about this stuff. All right, your first question, your favorite course and or destination anywhere in the world?
So my favorite course still at the moment. So I think you guys might have mentioned at the top of the show that I'm questing to play all the Core Crenshaw courses in North America. I don't know if I'll ever make it to China or Australia, where they have a couple other tracks, but I'm definitely trying to tick off the 23 courses that they built in North America. And one of the very first courses they built was Kapalua out on the beautiful island of Maui. And still to this day, that is still my favorite course that I've ever played. It's just, the views are outrageous. The routing is fantastic. The conditioning is great. There's nothing bad I can ever say about Kapalua. I've heard amazing things about the Bay course. I hope the next time I go to Maui, I'll also play the Bay course. But for me, Kapalua Plantation is the best. In terms of destination, we were just talking about Cypress Point. I'm going to have to put Monterey up there. It's a tremendous golf destination. Not only do you have top-notch private courses like Cypress Point, MPCC, but you also have, of course, Pebble Beach. You have the Black Horse and Bayonet courses. You have Pacific Grove, which is sort of the little scruffy underdog that everyone's been talking about over the last few years, which has arguably the best bang for your buck back nine in the entire U.S. The Monterey Peninsula destination area is a place that I just love and love going back to.
One of the questions I have for you, Pete, you mentioned Kapalua, is how many courses Core Crenshaw has done in North America? And then do you know how many they've done worldwide?
So they've done 23 that are now open in North America. There's a few under planning, but until they actually open, I don't really count them. It's about an even mix between public and private. In terms of worldwide, I'm not sure the full number because there are a couple courses that were designed solely by Bill Core in sort of that calculation. But they have several in Australia. They have the ultra private with 5 members in China.
Five members?
I think about 5 from what I've heard. They have a staff of about 100 and about 5 members ish.
All right, but, see, that's where you want to go to Cypress Point. I want to go there.
Shangguan Bay, from everyone I've read who's played it, it's an outrageous experience. It's about the most, I guess, pampered golf experience you could ever have in your life. Sort of playing there, you have the course to yourself. You have every single person sort of doting on you as you play there. And the course, because it has so few members, I don't know if it's 5, but it's a small amount. The course is just in pristine shape. There's zero divots and all of that. And it's a Core Crenshaw route. And it's supposed to be an excellent one that really maximizes the scenery there. So
what was the name of it again, for those of us who want to apply for membership?
I believe it's Shangguan Bay. Forgive the pronunciation, however, that may not be exactly how it's pronounced, but there might actually not be a U in that pronunciation, but it could be just Shangkin Bay. But however you pronounce it, it's supposed to be absolutely fantastic if you can get on.
You said Australia. So they've done other courses in Australia besides Lost Farm on Tasmania?
They've done Lost Farm. I believe Bill Core has also done another course there that escapes me at the moment. But, you know, I've really tried to. One of the things, I love people who go and try to do all these lists, whether it's top 100 in the world or it's playing all the British Open courses, the Rota there in the UK. All these lists are fantastic. For me, I only have so much time in my life and only so much money that I can spend. And so I felt playing just the Core Crenshaw courses in North America was a reasonable list to try to accomplish. And also, too, it also gets me, fortunately, to all different places in North America. By playing the list, you can play Oregon and Missouri and Nova Scotia and New York and Florida and Wisconsin. And so it really gets you out to see the country, which is, a great excuse to go see places I might not otherwise see. So nice. I'm not 100% on where every Core Crenshaw course is outside of North America. Although I will say that if Cool Links, again, pronunciation forgiveness is requested, if Cool Links in Scotland goes, I'm definitely going to be there.
I think I know what the answer to this next one is going to be. We're not going to let you say Cypress Point. What's the course or destination at the top of your golf travel bucket list? I'm assuming this is another Core Crenshaw, correct?
Actually, it has nothing to do with Core Crenshaw. So complete surprise, 180. The killer was the old man running the arcade. outside of
saying, only an entertainment lawyer would throw in that.
Yes, a little Scooby-Doo reference for you guys. Yeah. But so, outside of Cypress Point, outside the Core Crenshaw list, which of course, I would love to play places like Friar's Head and other core Crenshaw courses. I have several destinations that I would love to attend. One is definitely East Lothian. Another is New Zealand. I just love the aesthetic of the courses in those two areas. There's a lot of quirkiness. There's tremendous views. There's seaside. So I would love to play North Berwick. I'd love to go to New Zealand and play Parapara Emu and Terra Edie. All the courses that have terrible pronunciations for me. I'd also like to play, though. I mean, like, on, you know, as Darren and I had discussed, one of the areas that's really interesting to me that's risen to near the top of my bucket list now is actually Branson, Missouri, of all places. Not only do I want to see Yakov Smirnoff do a set.
I guarantee you in 120 episodes, that's the only time his name has been mentioned.
He is doing comedy in Branson, Missouri, and I want to see it, Mitch. And not only do I want to see that, but I want to go see Big Cedar. Yes, they do now have the new Core Crenshaw Ozark National there. They also have the Tiger Woods course and the other courses that have been built there. So I'm really curious to see what golf is like in Branson, Missouri, especially the southern part of that state. That's one of the reasons why it was so interesting going with Darren on our Sand Hills trip. I had never really thought of Wisconsin as a golf destination. Certainly knew about Whistling Straits and some of the other courses there, like Blue Mound. But it was great to see all these golf courses in Wisconsin that never really seemed to get the national publication that other states do. And I just loved Wisconsin. That's the reason why I love Nebraska as well. There's tremendous courses in Nebraska that just never really seem to get talked about. So I love going to places like that. And Missouri is sort of a place like that as well, that is a little bit off the beaten golf radar.
Just before you move on, that you have Core Crenshaw on the brain. So you said Sand Hills, but you meant Sand Valley is where we went in Wisconsin. And one thing I want to say about New Zealand real quickly is we're going there for Mitch's 100th birthday. So it feels like that
next year,
it feels like that you should go on that trip with us. When we do that, we're going to find some way to go there for in actuality, it would be your 70th, correct, Mitch, year after next.
Correct.
So we're going to find some way to go celebrate with Mitch, for his 70th in New Zealand, because obviously it's at the top of all of our bucket lists. But you say, despite the fact that you've mentioned now North Berwick, New Zealand, Branson, you didn't mention Cabot Cliffs, which I assumed was going to be the answer, and which I will go with you next year anytime that you want to go, because as has been established on this podcast and in my social media, I played 54 holes in one afternoon at Cabot Cliffs this year. But what is your yet next final answer to this question?
Okay, well, let me just backtrack. Yes, Cabot, and yes to all of that. I also want to play Highland Links. Yes to all of that. I want to have lobster coming out of my ears. So,
and you will.
I have done that.
So next year, Darren, we're doing it for sure. Yes, that's definitely on the tops. I didn't mean to throw you a curveball on that, but there's all these other great places in the world. How can I say Cabot, but not also say New Zealand, or not also say all these other places? One other place I'm just going to throw out there. I don't want this emergency 9/13 to go an hour and a half to 7 hours.
It already has.
But I will just, also throw out a shout out to Washington State. I think a lot of people don't talk about that area, but there are so many great golf courses there that I've yet to play, that I would love to play, including Gamble Sands, Wine Valley, Salish Cliffs, Sahali, Aldara, Chambers Bay. The list goes on. The Pacific Northwest has been to the forefront now because of Bandon Dunes and other resorts like Chambers Bay because of the U.S. Open. But there are a tremendous amount of golf courses in Washington State that I want to play. And I think it's really on an up and coming, just the entire state. Of course, all those courses I listed are not exactly close to all of each other. But I think as a state as a whole, I would just love to play there a lot when it's not raining.
All right. Would you guys mind if I moved on, or
could we please go to question number three as we pass the 20-minute mark?
Oh my God! I will shorten my answers here. We'll get through this, boys.
Trust. Don't you have a deposition to do or something, Pete? All right.
No.
There we go. All right. Number three. What's the best place you've ever stayed? Wait, Pete. Best place you've ever stayed.
All right. The best place would have to be the Lily Pond Cottages at Bandon Dunes. The one thing that surprised me so much about Bandon Dunes wasn't just that there's great golf, which of course there is, but that everything in the resort is set up there to be relaxing to you. You are in the middle of nowhere, coastal Oregon. Of course, you're there to play golf, but the whole resort is set up for your relaxation and enjoyment. And I've gone to a whole bunch of other resorts and other places, but Bandon Dunes really, really, really tries to put a fine point on your relaxation and enjoyment. And the Lily Pond Cabins where I stayed were absolutely fantastic. I met other guests around the property who also enjoyed where they were staying, whether it was in the lodge or elsewhere. And so it is the one. I will just give a very short shout out to Wild Horse in Nebraska. They recently put in some cottages there, which are really great. They have a great flow to them, a great way that you sort of have your own space, but yet you can have a social space with all your golf buds, which is a great marriage of those, of a golf trip, I feel. So just a little quick shout out about Wild Horse, but the best destination for sure is Lily Pond at Bandon Dunes.
Nice. Now I've stayed in all the lodging at Bandon now. And, all I have to say is you have to get back and try all the other ones because they're all exceptional and they all do different things. And it's certainly a place that they have thought out the options of what people want. Now, moving to number four, I know you are one of these guys. And I say that in quotes, you're like, our friend Eric Hart, here at Golf News Net. You research places to eat specifically when you go on a golf trip, even Goat Hill Park. We went to Goat Hill Park and you were ready to go have cheesesteaks at the strip mall down the street. So what is the single best thing you have ever eaten on a trip and where was it?
Well, so the fascinating thing was that the best thing I ever ate was something I wasn't planning on. So I try to plan out all these places to go and try while we do golf trips. But we'll go to Bandon and McKee's Pub. I hadn't heard anything about the Face Rock cheese curds, but those things just blew me away. They come in sort of a faux newspaper wrap. So, so good. Face Rock is the Face Rock Creamery is based in Bandon, so it's a local cheese maker. And the cheese curds that they make for Bandon Dunes, which are then fried and put to you after a 18 or 36 or 54 whole day, it's the best thing you could eat after eating. And I will just do one quick little shout out to yet another unexpected place, the Little Corporal Diner in Green Lake, Wisconsin.
Nice. Wait, the Little what Diner?
Corporal.
Like those pumpkin pancakes, and I'm a huge pancake guy, those pumpkin pancakes were one of the best things I've ever eaten. And in just the middle of this beautiful little lake town in Wisconsin, if you are there, if you're going to the Links of Lasonia, or if you're just sort of in that area, do yourself a favor and get those pancakes. So just a little shout out there.
These pumpkin pancakes he's talking about might be the best pancakes I've ever eaten. And I think you know that I am an aficionado when it comes to pancakes. So absolutely outstanding. Meanwhile, the Face Rock cheese curds he mentions, Face Rock Creamery has not been open that long, but I will say that you, Pete, are the first person. We've had almost every dish in McKee's mentioned on this show. We've had the lamb stew. We've had, of course, Grandma's meatloaf. We've had people mention the fish and chips and the pizza. I've had people mention Guinness shakes or floats, I guess, Guinness floats. Nobody has ever mentioned the Face Rock cheese curds. You, my friend, are a first once again.
This is why you have me on. You should have me on every emergency nine from now on.
You probably have enough to answer every emergency nine from now on. All right, that's great. So in addition to being hungry now, in addition to wanting to play golf courses, now I'm hungry too. So we'll move on, if that's okay with you two, foodies.
Number five,
besides golf and the people who play golf, what's the most important thing to you when you go on one of your many golf trips?
Yeah, it's the ability to see places, to build in enough time in your itinerary. If you're only going to go to Wisconsin once in your life, and you shouldn't, you should go to Wisconsin many times, but if you only go once, build in things like going to the Cheese Castle right over the Illinois-Wisconsin border. go try to find this corned beef hash on the Great Lake that was featured in a Diners and Drive-In. Go check out a museum or artwork. Go experience the place that you're in. I think a lot of the recent golf destinations are destinations in and of themselves of golf. You have to travel to the middle of nowhere to go to Bandon. You have to travel to the middle of nowhere to go to Sand Valley in Wisconsin. And Stream Song is also similarly situated in Florida. But take the time when you're going to these places to go and see places and buildings and people on your way to these places. It shouldn't just be about the golf. And for me, that's one of the best things about going on these golf trips is seeing the country on my way to golf and on my way back from golf. So that's nice. One of the things that I love to do on these trips.
Great answer.
Yep. Couldn't have said it better myself. Number six, what's the one piece of golf apparel or equipment you can't live without?
See, I had hoped I would be on episode 40 or 50, not 120. So at this point, you guys and all of your guests have taken up, I would say, almost every single piece of golf apparel, clubs, putters, rain gear, two under underwear at this point. I guess the one thing I would say is I hike a lot as well in addition to golf. And the number one piece of equipment that you need for hiking is a good pair of boots and socks. And so I think the same holds true for golf. I know all of us really like to walk when we golf. And even if not, though, I think a pair of really good fitting golf shoes and really good socks is essential, especially if you're doing 36 at Bandon or East Lothian or wherever. You're going to be walking a lot, so you just got to make sure that your footwear holds up to what you want to do.
Do you have a sock of choice?
I like the quarter foot joy socks, but I'm agnostic on socks, so I'll try anything that fits well.
I will say the new compression socks from our friends at Kent Wool, obviously I just did two and a half weeks in Scotland. I walked every day, 36 holes, a lot of the days, and they were an absolute lifesaver. And one tip that we had on the show from somebody else, I don't remember who it was, mentioning that changing your socks in between rounds is just a gloriously smart idea. I've started to do it now at Bandon and at other places where I'm playing 36, and it makes so much sense to do. But I'm with you. I mean, a good pair of socks, if you're in that kind of environment, as Mitch knows, and as I mentioned on the show, now during the summertime and the springtime, I'm wearing the Street Encounter shoes that are slip-ons from Under Armour, and I don't wear socks at all with them, and it actually is even way better to do. But if I have to wear socks, I'm with you. You got to get a good pair of good ones. Otherwise, it's just a killer.
What about shoes? Do you have shoes that you like above all others?
I think FootJoy makes a really solid product. And I've sort of gone back and forth between ones with soft spikes and ones just sort of with the ridges and the nubs. I've sort of now gone back to sort of the more soft spike Black Widow model that FootJoy makes. But I think any are great. Right now I'm wearing actually the True Knit golf shoes by True Linkswear. Fantastic shoes, both just like on the course, and I just wear them in my everyday life. So huge fan of FootJoy. They're the standard bearer, but I got to give a shout out to the True Knit. They are fantastic shoes, especially here in Southern California. They're lightweight, very aerable, and they also have a bit of water resistance to them on the few days we actually get water. So they're actually a really perfect SoCal or desert shoe. So definitely check them out.
I'm going to ask you about your handicap. Just kind of give us a general idea of what Darren and I know, but for our listeners who aren't familiar with you and haven't had the pleasure of playing golf with you, your handicap. And normally we say, what tees, what yardage do you like to play from? I want to know that, but I also want to know what your feeling is about tees and yardages. There are some people who are sticklers. I'm going to do it this way. And there are others who aren't. How do you feel about it?
So to answer the first question first, I play to about a 10 to 12, although I definitely have the ability to blow up into a 20 plus. So, but I'd like to think of myself as between a 10 to a 12. My driver has always been my Achilles heel, but I think I've actually just recently worked that out. So I'm actually going to seriously start working on my game. We'll see where that ends up. Who knows? But at the end of the day, I play golf to have fun and to have great experiences. So I really don't care what my score is so much as like, do I care about how I felt after I've played 18 holes or whatever. And part of that, I think, has to do with where do you tee from? I think there's been a huge movement about teeing it forward. And I typically tend to play from the blue tees, so definitely not the black pro tees, but I typically tend to play from the blue tees. But I think one of the best innovations I've seen in recent years is at Darren's very most favorite course in the entire U.S., Rustic Canyon, which has which despite Darren's effusive praise of that course, they have an amazing a really great tee philosophy. So they have, you know, the whites and the blues and the senior tees and the junior tees and all of that, but they also have a tee set called the Hance tees, named after Gil Hance, who co-designed the course with Jeff Shackelford. And the Hance tees move around to various tee boxes. So one tee box you might be playing from the blues, the next tee box you might be playing from the whites, the next tee box you might be playing from the golds, and they vary it on the whole. And I actually really like that philosophy, that sort of that variety, and they structure it. It's structured on the scorecard that this is where you play from. And I guess it could be variable on a given day, but I really like that concept that you really mix it up, that you're not just beholden to the blue tees. You're not just beholden to playing from the tips, that you just, and gives you different looks around that course. And so I wish more courses did the Hance tee concept.
Well, you know that even without calling them the Hance tees, you do know that you can actually do that yourself, right? You know you can get on a course and look at the scorecard and play it from different tee boxes.
Right, but for the people who are keeping a handicap.
No, if you're a handicap and you're keeping score, you can't. I get that.
Right, they can't get a rating and a stroke. Now,
well, can they get a rating and a stroke on the Hance tees?
Well, I believe so. Right? I believe there is
at Rustic Canyon.
I believe there's a slope and rating on the Hance tees if I remember correctly. But
all right, well, that's good.
But my point is that I mean, Pete obviously is being sarcastic. I'm not a huge fan of Rustic Canyon, but I am a huge fan of this concept, and I've said it a lot of times. I tweeted out a thing recently where I was at Makrahanish Dunes where I got to a par three that David McClay Kidd had designed, and everybody, all the tee boxes played from the same tee box, from the same tee yardage. And I was like, there aren't enough places that do this. Too often, the design sets itself up that, well, we need to move 10 yards this way or 10 yards this way. And golf courses that have yardages where everybody needs to move, you know, where needs to move up. Let's say you're building a tee boxes that are 5,800 yards. That doesn't mean that the par threes all need to play from 90 yards. Sometimes the par three should still play from 130, 140. An average guy can play those. It's the par fives and the par fours that need to change. And I think that's what he's done with the Hance tees. And Pete, despite the fact that I am not a huge fan of Rustic Canyon as a whole, I applaud you for bringing up the Hance tees.
Well, thank you. I'll take your applause. And Mitch, I think there also is something to, allowing, putting it before the golfer. I mean, yes, it's great to have the flexibility and say, hey, look, you know what? Right now I'm just going to play from the red tees, or I'm going to move it back to the white tees, or whatever it is. But to actually sort of have something laid out for you as a choice.
Formally,
that like, okay,
you mean.
Formally.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would love it if courses did that. Are you kidding? I think it's fantastic.
It's a strategy I use at Ridge Creek here in Central California, a John Folk course, all the time. And that when I go play, I come up with a strategy of holes in the way that they should be played. Primarily so, Michael Smee, who I've mentioned, is a big hitter. I want to be able to compete against him, but I don't want to ask him to play from 5,800 yards. So I find the right strategy of tee boxes throughout the golf course to make a 6,300-ish yard course that is fun for me, but is also still fun for him. And I think a lot more courses ought to do that. They ought to employ that strategy. So, all right. Question number 8. You are an entertainment lawyer. I have a double-sided question for this that we did not warn you about. I want to know, first of all, who is the most interesting person you've ever golfed with, Pete? But I also want to know, in the course of your work, who is the biggest celebrity you've ever encountered as well in person?
On the golf course or off the golf course?
Both.
Huh. That's interesting. Well, I had dinner once with Ethan Hawke and Jude Law, so I don't know if that counts.
That's a decent dinner.
Anything. Okay. I really haven't encountered too many celebrities on the golf course. I tend to play public tracks, although I always quest for private tracks. But it seems like, especially in LA, a lot of them are holed up in the Rivieras and the lakesides that I don't frequent too much. But in terms of the most interesting person you have ever golfed with, aside from Darren and Mitch, it's not fair to name you guys. but there are two answers to that story. One involves you guys and one is somebody else. So I'll just do the somebody else first. One, I was very, very fortunate to play the tremendous course Black Sheep in Illinois with the golf course architect Dave Essler. Of course, Darren was there. That to play a golf course with the golf architect who designed it is an unbelievable experience. It was so enlightening. It was fascinating to see what he enjoyed and to sort of pick his brain a little bit. That was just an unbelievable experience. I don't know how any golfer can sort of hope to replicate that, like that they'll just run into Tom Doak somewhere. But it's a tremendous way to play a golf course with the architect sort of in your ear about things. The other great people who we met was when we played Goat Hill together with Mitch and Darren and myself and a couple who were very new to golf, but were really into it. Their energy about golf and learning all about it was infectious. And they were both very interesting people telling a lot of different stories that we probably can't tell on this podcast. And it was just fascinating. Typically, if you're a golf fanatic and you're paired with someone who's just learning the game, it can be a frustrating experience because they don't quite know what they're doing. They are playing slow and are unsure of themselves. And if you just want to get around in like 3 or 4 hours, that can make for a difficult afternoon for you. And then you kind of feel like you have to hold their hand. But with this couple, they were just so engaging and so into golf that I just sat back and let them take the wheel on the golf experience. And I think we were all better for it. So
we also got to play with my dog Ragsy that day. And I believe the woman who we played with, who you're talking about, had a previous career in Las Vegas as a quote unquote dancer,
an entertainer. Yes, an entertainer.
So that was one of the more memorable days. I agree with you, Pete, and not in a bad way. Like I said, it was around, and we've talked about this. Mitch and I talked about it when we talked about Goat Hill. It was not a frustrating day, but it was a long day because there were just a lot of people out on the golf course. We played as a fivesome, and we did it because we knew we were in for the 5 hours. It was going to take that time to play. And, in fact, I think Mitch went, got on a flight, flew all the way home before you and I putted out on the 18th.
I think I left after about 13 holes. But I have to agree with you. All of us have played golf with a whole bunch of different kinds of people. And I would put those two up there in terms of interest and kind of a fascinating day on the golf course that was unexpected with anybody. They were so completely different, both of them, than anybody I certainly had played with before, and in a great way. And the thing that touched all of us, I think, at the end of the day was how much in love with the game they were.
Right.
Without being great at it.
Yeah, they were just happy to be out there hitting golf shots. They didn't care. They didn't care if they were bad. They didn't care what their score was. They just loved it. And, I think they loved Ragsy even more. I think Ragsy jumped into their golf cart and rode around for a while until he got thrown out on a tight curve and decided, I don't think I want to be in a golf cart anymore.
Yeah, you almost lost Ragsy to that woman that day.
Yeah, there's proves no to question. You that he's my dog and that he doesn't want to be in a golf cart. He wants to be walking.
All right. Are you ready for number nine? All right. The one golf course you wish everyone knew about. I can't wait for this one.
All right. So because we're on episode 120, there's been a lot of tremendous courses that I love that have already been talked about, like Pine Dunes in Texas. And I believe someone must have mentioned Pacific Grove at this point in Monterey Peninsula. I'm going to give you two courses, one public, one private. The private course I wish everyone knew about was Clear Creek Tahoe outside of Reno, Nevada. It's going on the way to Tahoe, still on the Nevada side, by Carson City, I should say. It's a Core Crenshaw course. It is a mountain course. The routing is fantastic. The views are sublime. The driving range is perhaps the best driving range I've ever been at in my life. It really doesn't get too much publicity, especially with the public track Edgewood that hosts the tournament every year, just down the mountain a little bit by the lake and some of the other courses around there. But Clear Creek Tahoe, private course, absolutely fantastic. On the public side, another course that's sort of maybe a little bit overshadowed by its bigger brother, right outside of Bandon, Oregon, up the coast a little bit, is a little town called Florence, Oregon. In Florence is some tremendous restaurants. It's also a beautiful little town. But outside of Florence is the Florence Golf Links. It is great. It is really, really, really underrated. I highly recommend anyone, if you're flying into Portland and you're driving down the coast that way, you're going to be driving past Florence. Stop in, get around at Florence before you're going on your way to Bandon. You won't be disappointed. It's a really great course. It's very reasonably priced. I love Bandon to death. It is an expensive place to visit. Florence gives you a lot of what Bandon has. The front nine is very pine tree, so it's very much like the Core Crenshaw course at Bandon. And the back nine is very linksy, so it gives you a lot of Pacific Dunes and Bandon Dunes-esque, all in one package, all for a very affordable package. So those are my two recommendations that I wish everyone knew about.
And Florence Golf Links, for people out there who might not have heard of it, used to be called Sand Pines. So it was. It's always been a good stop when you're going up and down the coast there, north of Bandon, a great place. Now, Pete, we're going to ask you the bonus question, tell us your best golf story. But we have three questions that we're kind of rolling out and testing. And the first one of these I'm going to ask you is, what makes a round of golf fun for you?
So, I mean, as all golfers can appreciate, I think that if you're playing well, that makes the round more fun. I mean, that, you know, just as the honest answer, if you're having a terrible day on the links, even if it's a gorgeous course, you're not going to feel as great about it if you're killing a lot of worms. That being said, I think for me, if I'm looking at a golf course and it's fun, I'm getting around it in a reasonable amount of time. I'm not waiting on shots. If I'm paired with someone, I either like to play alone or I like to play with groups. If I'm paired with someone, I want to be having a good time with them. I don't want them to be all angry that they're killing worms. Like, it should be a good group. And so it's the whole experience of playing golf. It's not just, oh, does this routing maximize the landscape, or is that bunkering too ridiculous or not. It's really about the whole overall experience of the day. Am I out there? Is it enjoyable? Weather is an enjoyable course, is an enjoyable company. And all that sort of goes into whether I'm having fun or not.
All right. That's a great answer. I like that.
Thank you, Mitch.
No, I like that. All right. What makes a course, let's leave the fun. What makes a course, a golf course, great?
Well, so all those things that I just talked about that doesn't necessarily go into a fun experience, I think do go into the great experience. Does the course have history? Are you playing in the footsteps of legends? I think that's always a great thing if a course has a lot of great history to it. The second thing is, does the course offer you multiple ways to play the holes? If the course is just routed in one particular way where you have to hit the point A and then make sure you're below the hole on point B, that gets tiresome after a while. So, I think a lot of people really like a course like Ballyneal, which is high in the rankings, because there are so many different ways that you can play that course. There's so many different ways the ball rolls, and then you can attack the greens. I think variety is the spice of life. I tend to play public courses, although I secretly always want to join a private club. But I think for me, the number one test of a private club is, does the course interest me in with a variety of shots if I play it multiple times? And I think that the third thing is, does the course give me some sort of eye candy with the routing? Does it use the hills really well? Does it maximize the views that you can get there? Is it something that intrigues the golfer because of how it's routed? I think all these elements like go into what makes a great course. In other words, does it engage you on all your various senses, both the five senses and then all your golf nerd brains? I mean, does it engage you in all those ways? And if it does, then I feel like it's a great course. I don't think it necessarily means that it has to have like a Redan hole, or it has to have this or that. I think it's just, doesn't engage you as a human being playing a game. And I think that all the great golf courses certainly do that.
I think Golf Nerd Brain needs to be the new name of our podcast, Mitch.
Yeah, I'm all for it.
It's funny you say that too, Pete, because when we had David McClay Kidd on, I was talking about a Redan style hole that he's built at Rolling Hills Country Club. And, you know, he talked about how, well, it's not really a true Redan. It's kind of our twist on a Redan. And I think those are the things that those little twists that designers do are the things that truly make a golf course great, especially in the greens. For me, I can play a course with an average routing with great greens, but if the greens aren't great, it's a lot harder to get excited about the golf course. Obviously, that's why I love Mike Strantz and Kidd and all these different guys who we encounter, who we talk about so much on the show. So we want to know, what's the most interesting golf course? If you haven't already listed it, what's the most interesting golf course you've played in the past year, in the past 12 months?
So I recently took a trip up to San Francisco, and of course, if you go up to San Francisco, everyone's saying, well, did you get on to Olympic? You know, did you play TPC Harding Park? You know, those are the couple of courses that sort of pulse. And then, you know, if you are into lists, everyone's like, did you get on the San Francisco Golf Club? You know, no one knows anything about that. I feel the one course that almost no one ever talks about in San Francisco was the course that has blown me away, and that is Cal Club. And I was fortunate enough to play it. It's very private, and it's kind of unfair to say it that I, you know, that is the course, but it is so true. And when I was reading about it after I had played it, someone had mentioned that it's basically as if someone took sort of the best sand belt Australian golf courses and plopped them in the middle of San Francisco. And I think that's such an apt description. The routing there is fantastic. It engages you on all levels. There's so much visual candy. The course is in fantastic shape. It's ultra private. So whether many golfers who are listening to this will get a chance to play it, it's unfair that all these golf courses in the U.S. that are so great are private for a lot of the part. But Cal Club is just one of those places that if you do are lucky enough to get the invite, go and play that. I would play that 10 times out of 10. And if I had the choice in San Francisco, and there are tremendous golf courses in San Francisco, within basically a 5 to 10 mile area, you have Olympic, Cal Club, San Francisco, Lake Merced, and TPC Harding Park, plus also Sharp Park, depending on where you're defining the borders, the Alistair McKenzie public course. You have an embarrassment of riches in San Francisco, but of all the golf courses I've played across the country, Cal Club takes the cake, and it's one of the ones that is least talked about, which is crazy to me. So I just can't say enough things about that. Plus also, too, as a private club, extremely laid back. You don't get a sense of stuffiness there. The membership is very welcoming to non-members. The staff is beyond accommodating. It's an amazing private golf club experience. And I think because it flies under the radar, it can be all of those things. But even if it became even more well-known than it is, I think that it would still hew to a tremendous golf course and a tremendous day.
I love you bringing that up. And I remember watching you on your social media when you played it. And I thought to myself, I was jealous. I thought to myself, I want to kill you for playing that. I didn't tweet that out because I didn't want to get banned from Twitter like Mitch did for saying something like that. But at the same time, it just Cal Club looks incredible. It's one of those places that for some reason I've never gotten up to living here in Central California. And I got to find the right person to go because it's definitely one of those places that just looks like it would be a blast, and especially be a blast with my hickories.
Oh, yeah. You would love that course with your hickories. And especially if I know you tend to maybe sometimes move up, you don't play from the tips with your hickories often. And the routing on that course from where I imagine you playing would be absolutely fantastic. Like it already is from a further back tees, but just I feel like playing hickories at that course, you're doing a great golden age design, which has been refreshed and updated, but I think you'd have a blast playing there with those clubs.
All right. This leads us, I can't believe I'm saying this, to your final question.
two hours in. Yes.
Yeah.
We're at the 55 minute mark.
It's okay. Cause all of this is great. It's all great info. But your final question, we kind of call it a bonus question, but we're losing that for this episode. Your best golf course story, that can be the coolest, weirdest, craziest thing that you've ever seen or done on a golf course. Feel free.
Well, I think I'll have to go with the sentimental answer to this, and it's near and dear to my heart because my dad got me into the game of golf. He used to play when he was a teenager in his early 20s, but then he went away from the game when he had a family and was working hardcore. And when I started first playing when I was a teenager, he would take me out. And we grew up in the Northeast in upstate New York. And so if you grow up in an environment like that, you're basically playing golf till you physically can't play golf anymore because there's snow on the ground. There's just no way to do it. And so we were at that very tail end of the golf season where everything was getting frosty and it was turning to snow in winter. And I'll never forget this. There is a nice little course in Vallejo, New York. And the first hole is a dogleg right. And there's a pond in front of the green. And we were playing at the time of the year where the pond was frozen over. And my dad just sculled a shot. And it skipped over the frozen pond up onto the green, and he had a putt for birdie. And so I'll just never forget that. That's one of the craziest things I've ever seen, and also one of the best things I've ever seen on the golf course. So
that is outstanding.
Those are the kinds of things that, of all the great things you've experienced, when you can pull that up that quick and go right back there, that is what the great game is all about. I always felt I didn't start playing till I was 30. My father had already passed away a couple of years before, so he was never at all a part of my love for the game and what the game has given me. So it's great that you feel that way. Thanks for sharing that with us. Really cool. And thanks for being with us. Thanks for sharing much of your precious time this afternoon to record this and your other episode on Rams Hill.
Thank you for sharing your precious time and listening to my ridiculousness.
Nobody's come in and tried to throw you out of your office there on the lot?
I have bolted the doors shut. I have cleared my schedule in order to talk about this. And What I really hope for is I really hope to play with you guys again in the near future, and then we can come on and do this all again and talk about all our new golf adventures.
Well, Darren, I think we're both pretty sure that we're going to have Pete on again. It won't take 120 episodes. I know that.
I don't know. It might.
Nice, Darren. There go all your invites.
Pete, do you ever have random celebrities? Like, I know you worked on, what was the movie with Denzel? Fences. Do you ever have like random celebrities? Does Denzel ever just walk into your office to talk about his contract?
If he did, I wonder what I was doing wrong, I guess. But I don't have random celebrities stop by, but you know, I currently work for a major motion picture studio, and we have celebrities here on the lot. And it's so jarring to just sort of walk around at your job and then see people who are known to millions and millions of people around the world. It's such a weird but awesome job to have in that way. So, it's great to be part of Hollywood tradition and to help be a part of help creating stories that people really like. And it's a great job to have. I wish I had more time to play golf than I do. I'm going to definitely try to rectify that in the next year or so. But, you know, I think a lot of people you guys have on here are in the golf industry, and it's great to hear their perspective. For me, I'm just a workaday Joe. I might work in the entertainment industry and have some celebrity stories that other people don't have, but I think I am your listener writ large. I mean, I listen to you guys all the time. I've listened to all the podcasts, and I can't thank you enough for hipping me to all these great golf travel destinations. And I've been fortunate enough to play with you guys a couple times. And it's all about finding friends and places and ways to enjoy your life. And you guys are such an invaluable resource, not just for golf, but for living a life to enjoy and seeing experiences and golf courses. And I just can't thank you guys enough for doing what you do. So thank you.
Well, we love the fact that, one, that you're our friend, but two, that you are our pretty much only super fan. So,
Darren, we're going to have to come up with something for Pete to celebrate his listening to all 118 episodes up to these two that he just did.
Well, he's going to listen to his own two as well.
Well,
so that'd
I'm
be
saying at this moment, it will be 118. Now, whatever the number is, he deserves something. So
we need to find a gift for Pete that is on the level of the gifts that he has found for us. And when I say that, I mention the fact that I have drank most of this bottle of Sortilage in the hour and a half we've been talking. And I'm probably just going to need to go to sleep after we've done this. But
well, see, I beg to differ, because if there were really a lot in that bottle, you wouldn't be able to say the name Sortilage.
It would come out Sortilage.
So,
but see, I'm setting the bar too high for myself, because the next time we all get together for golf, I'm going to have to try to figure out another whiskey to get you guys that means something to you guys.
That's
so
true. That's but we're point. Pretty easy to please, Pete. Trust me.
All right. Well, I'm on the lookout.
Pete, you can never go wrong with more Sortilage. So, I mean, if you're finding it, we're drinking it.
I've got a hookup.
Nice.
All right. Thanks a million, man, for spending the time, as we said, and for your kind words. And we're grateful for you. I hope the listeners could tell that, too. Really one of the great guys. Pete Flanagan, you can check him out again. And after listening to him, I would think you'd want to. A lot of great thoughts and the ability to write about them too. Regripped.com. That's regripped.com. You can follow him on Twitter and Instagram at Regripped, all one word. And you can follow us as well on social media, of course. You can rate us on iTunes. You can help us spread the word about the best in golf travel. And just like Pete Flanagan and Darren and I, get out there. Keep on running down your dream. So long.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets, with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.